Welcome to Yanker Jacks with Brian Swope.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Part of the Gateway City Sports Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Yakker Jacks. How's it going? So glad you guys are here joining us today. It's going to be a good, bright, hopefully sunny day. Hopefully all the rain has passed away. It has just been a wet, sloppy mess. I don't know about where you guys are, but where I am, it is swampy and nasty. Good to have you guys back. Lots to go over this morning, lots to talk about. First thing that I want to talk about is, wow, the big bombshell that has come out of St. Louis yesterday. We heard that there was a surprise court hearing in St. Louis involving the city of St. Louis and the NFL and what happened with the Rams relocation. We all knew this was coming. We saw this coming from a mile away. Everybody in St. Louis, I think anybody who hasn't been living under a rock for the last year or more, knows that this has been coming down the pike. We look at yesterday, there was a surprise hearing in St. Louis, and reports just started pouring in. I followed Randy Carricker on Twitter. I don't know if you guys did, but it was amazing. Some of the things that were coming out on this, and if you didn't get a chance to find out about it or to hear more, basically imagine that you suspect that your significant other is cheating on you, and you're just positive that it's happening, and then you confront them, and then you find out it was way worse than you ever thought it could be. I mean, they just start spilling it and pouring their guts out, and you find out, oh my gosh, like, yeah, not only were they cheating on me, but they were, wow, this is, I never could have imagined how bad and ugly and nasty this thing was. That's exactly what it feels like with this whole Rams relocation scandal, and scandal is the best way to put it. For more information on that, I mean, we've got a great source for NFL stuff here, Derek King over at the Derek King Sports Show. He had a quick sort of emergency, I want to say, show last night, and he had Howard Balzer on, and they sat and they talked, and there was Balzer is great. He is amazing with just being able to put together a timeline of things. And one of the things he noted was that back in, I think he said it was in 2010, that when the Rams were fully owned by Stan Kroenke, when Kroenke really took over like sole ownership of the team, he noted that at the time Kroenke said something like LA baby, and that should have been a warning sign for everybody involved. But if you look at just some of the things that Randy Carricker sent out yesterday, which I thought was great, and just kind of kept everybody in the know and what was going on. First of all, the judge apparently says there's a preponderance of evidence that exists against Mara, Kraft, Jones, Rooney, and one other for damages. Most NFL owners, he said, were spared discovery of finances. Apparently now, the city of St. Louis can request a look into the finances of some of these owners. There was so much more that was going on. Carricker says that Jerry Jones admitted that he urged Stan Kroenke to move. The Rams signed a contract with Jones Legends Corp to sell PSLs and luxury boxes after they knew they were moving. And it's just incredible, just the sliminess, the ickiness that is just all around this thing. Kroenke is, he's a weasel. He's a weasel. He's a worm. He's lower than low. The only other person I think that might be lower than him right now in the sports world is Kevin Dimoff, just lying through his teeth to the city of St. Louis, lying through his teeth to even the NFL. You know, Carriker pointed out that Dimoff was actually forwarding articles to the NFL about St. Louis's murder rate and things like that. Things that were just, and it was completely misconstrued, completely taken out of context. He only cited the worst statistics in the worst areas, and they never took into account the county. They didn't take into account St. Louis County in any of the financials, in any of the economic proposals, in anything, in evaluating the viability of the NFL in St. Louis. They completely skewed everything to convince these NFL owners in the league to allow them to move. And it's just, it's an incredible story. One of the biggest sports scandals, I think, in the history of the NFL, at least as far as I can remember, one of the biggest scandals that I can remember in my time. And if you want to see how all of that's playing out, if you want to get a better breakdown, a more detailed breakdown than what I can give you, then you need to go and check out the Derek King Sports Show, because Derek has everything that you would want to know about this situation covered, and he and Howard Balzer go over it, and I mean, they just take care of everything. So looks like the NFL is going to be paying some damages, and they should have seen that coming. Speaking of seeing things coming, sometimes life hits you and it's unexpected. Well, you need to keep yourself protected. And I'm talking about insurance, but not just any insurance will do. You need Allstate. That's why the Wiley Group has two locations in Festus and Arnold to serve you. They offer home, auto, boat, motorcycle, business, life insurance, investments, and so much more. They use a customized approach that is tailor-made to meet your needs. Give Sean and his team a call today at 636-764-6294. They can help you with an insurance quote right over the phone. Or if you just want to talk about sports, they do that too. Don't have time to call? Just email Sean at seanwiley@allstate.com and learn about the coverage options that you need to keep you and your family protected. Remember, you are in good hands with Allstate. So it's pretty quiet around the league in terms of games not going on. All-Star break is happening. Home Run Derby was last night. Futures game was on Sunday night. I was blown away by the Home Run Derby. It was incredible. It was supposed to be the Shohei Ohtani show, and it turned out to be the Pete Alonso show. I can't think of anybody else right now who is better suited, better made for a Home Run Derby than Pete Alonso. I mean, the guy was just up there dancing around, smiling, goofing off, laughing. At one point, his pitcher actually hit him with a pitch, and he just kind of smiled and laughed it off. And I think he, you know, took the next one deep, like way deep. He was just hitting these monster moonshots, and it was just fun to watch. I always look forward to the Home Run Derby every year, and it was a shame not having it last year. But I was really looking forward to it, and having it in Colorado was just phenomenal. The balls were just flying out of the park, and so it was fun to watch, super, super fun to watch. And for a fan of the game, the fan of the home run, I mean, even if you're not a fan, I mean, my wife, she'll watch, you know, some baseball with me, but for the most part, she just kind of tunes out. I mean, even she was watching the Home Run Derby. I mean, she got into it. What are the rules? You know, how do they determine who gets to be in the Derby? I mean, she was just asking all kinds of things because it's a fun event. It's the kind of event that will draw people who normally otherwise wouldn't be drawn to the game. And it's just a fun thing. It's a fun thing for the fans to be involved in, to get to watch. And, you know, you get to see a different side of some of these players as they're kind of goofing around and, you know, just kind of enjoying the whole moment. And it's great to see. I wish that there were more events, I guess, like this, more things that were a little more exciting for baseball, because baseball is a beautiful sport. It's my favorite sport. I love baseball, and I love the nuances in the game. I love the different strategies to the game. I love the in-game gamesmanship, and it's just, it's fun. It's America's pastime, and I love it. And it is still, to me, my absolute favorite sport to play and to, you know, just enjoy. I love the game. I love the game. But, you know, it is what it is. It's become kind of stale lately, and I got a special guest on this episode, and we're going to talk about a little bit of that and how the game is changed and has changed and is changing. But it's still, to me, the best game ever invented. I absolutely love baseball. And speaking of the All-Star game, Yadi was selected to replace Buster Posey on the roster, and Molina has opted not to attend the All-Star game. He has decided not to in order to nurse his sore foot so that he can be better rested and healthy for the team moving forward in the second half. Is there not a more team-first guy than Yadier Molina? You know, he's taken a lot of criticism for not wanting to come out of games, for playing maybe more games than people think that he should. But honestly, when it comes down to it, do you really want anybody else behind the dish than Yadi catching our pitchers and calling a game? There's not a person in the game today, or even in recent memory, that calls a better game than Yadi does. I can't think of anyone. And it's amazing that there are people who would doubt his Hall of Fame credentials. To me, Yadi is a no doubt, you know, slam dunk, you know, Hall of Famer. If not on the first ballot, then most certainly on the second or third. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. This is just, it's amazing to watch not only what he's doing, but what he's doing at his age. Molina's as old as I am. You know, we're both 39, and I wake up in the morning, back is sore, you know, neck hurting, you know, just the aches and pains of getting older. And yet, this guy is still doing it at his age and putting his body through just one of the most physically demanding positions in all of sports. And I can't say enough about him. Yadi Molina is, he's a freak of nature. Let's put it that way. The guy's an absolute freak of nature. I don't know how anybody else is able to do what someone like Yadi is able to do. So it's just phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal what Yadi is doing. And I think that it's amazing. And let's appreciate it while we have it, because we don't know if this is going to be Yadi's last year or not. Maybe it will be, maybe it won't. I'd love to see him come back. I'd love to see him and Waino come back when the team really has a real shot. I hope that they make the moves that they need to in order to make it happen. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens with Yadi and Waino and this Cardinals team, which is a mess right now. They needed this break. I can't think of a team. Well, there's several teams I can think of that probably really needed this break. I'm sure Colorado and especially the Cubs right now. Oh my gosh, they've just kind of turned into a mess lately. It's like someone just gave them like the losing sauce and put it in their drinks or something, because they are just, I mean, you hate to see it happen to such a good organization if you get, if you get what I mean. There's not a better team it could happen to than the Cubs. It's nice to see them losing some games and joining us, joining our misery. You know, misery loves company, so the more the Cubs can lose, as long as we're stinking it up, then the better. That'd be nice to watch the Cubs, you know, have to suffer with us. At least it's not the Reds that are doing well. I mean, they're doing okay, but I mean, the Brewers are just, they're looking really good right now. I don't think there's anybody in the Central that's going to catch the Brewers at all. It's just not going to happen. So moving on, there's some news that came out this past week. A couple episodes ago, we talked about Matthew Tkachuk coming possibly to St. Louis. We talked about how Tkachuk wanted out of Calgary. One of the names that was kind of thrown around in potential trade talks was Vladdy Tarasenko. Well, we now get word, supposedly, Vladdy wants out of St. Louis. And there's been some speculation as to where he might go, where he could go. I really would love to see this happen. Tkachuk wants out of Calgary. Vladdy wants out of St. Louis. Army, make this happen. Make this happen. I think that there's probably a myriad of reasons why Tarasenko wants out. I think a lot of people suspect that he was upset that O'Reilly was named the captain and not him. You know, whatever reason it was, I don't know that Vladdy is that petty. I don't think necessarily is. Maybe he just needs a fresh start. Maybe he just needs a change of scenery, you know, somewhere where he can, you know, get fully, completely healthy and just, you know, maybe he needs to be in a place where he can really be the star. And I don't know if that's the case or not, but, you know, he's a good player. He always has been a good player, and he's loved by the city of St. Louis. The fans here could not love him or appreciate him more. He's been through, you know, multiple shoulder surgeries, injury after injury, and the team has stuck by him, the fan base has stuck by him, and you know, he's one of, at least for me, one of my favorite Blues of all time is Vladdy Tarasenko. And so I am going to be sad to see him go if he leaves. But, you know, at the same time, I can understand it. You know, I can understand it. And maybe he's in a place where, you know, he just doesn't feel like, you know, he's a fit anymore for this team. And, you know, you can get to that point sometimes in your career where you just realize, you know what, this isn't where I need to be right now. And if that's the way that Vladdy feels and he wants out, then, you know, let him go. Let him go. And, you know, don't harbor any ill will towards him, because Vladdy gave himself for this team. I mean, he did so much to try to stay healthy, to do the best that he could for the fans and for the team. And so I'm not going to, you know, get down on Vladdy too much if he wants to leave and try it somewhere else. Can you blame a guy? I mean, I don't. Maybe some of you can, but I don't blame him. I understand, you know, kind of the need for a change of scenery. We've all been there. I've been there before, and, you know, just working in a position where I just was so bogged down, just so felt so stifled, and just felt like, you know what? I just need a change of scenery. And it's natural. It's natural for people to feel like that. And, you know, sometimes I think we forget that these sports stars are humans just like we are. And because of their, you know, humanity, they want the same things that any other normal person wants. And, you know, if Vladdy needs to find that somewhere else, then by all means, let him find it somewhere else. And, you know, I will wish him the best, and I hope the rest of St. Louis will join me in wishing him the best as well, because Vladdy's a good guy, and he always has been a good teammate, I think, and has always put his body through a lot for this team, has tried his hardest to be healthy for the team, has tried everything he can to be on the ice and making a difference, making an impact. But if this is a situation where he wants out, I say let him go. And the target that I would be after if I'm Doug Armstrong would be Matthew Tkachuk, and bring that guy home. That would be amazing. So I want to get to our guest today. But before I get to our guest, I need to talk to you guys about Holy Smokers Rub Company. When it's time to add a little spice to your life, make your next grilling adventure a spiritual experience with Holy Smokers Rub Company. They have several different flavors to choose from, each one especially blended for a taste sensation that you will pray never ends. Best part is, all proceeds go towards helping families who are going through the process of adopting a child. So look them up on Facebook and be sure to use coupon code GCS10. That's the letters GCS, the number 10, for 10% off of your order. Holy Smokers Rub Company, bless your taste buds. I cannot say enough about this stuff, guys. I don't know if I've talked at length about it, but oh my goodness, Holy Smokers Rub Company is amazing. I put it on everything. Their brisket rub is amazing. They have a new chili lime rub as well that's phenomenal. I put it on some shrimp and some tilapia over the weekend, and it was just amazing. I loved it. The brisket rub is probably my favorite right now. I put it on steaks, put it on burgers, man. It's awesome. So anyway, I would like to welcome our guest for today. Joining me now on the Holy Smokers guest line is my friend, a man whose work I have come to enjoy and respect very much, Mr. Mark Saxon. Mark, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty well. Good to see you, Brian. It's nice to get reacquainted with everybody and talk a little Cardinals baseball. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I want to start off with the Home Run Derby. Did you watch that last night?
Yeah, I did, actually. We went over to some family here in town in St. Louis, and I took my kids. And the only way to keep my boys, you know, from wanting to go home after about, you know, 30, 40 minutes of being over with our relatives is to put on, like, sports. So we did that. We all, a whole room full of people, we all got into it. I normally don't watch the Home Run Derby, but I really enjoyed that one.
Oh, it was crazy. I loved the obviously you've got Pete Alonso who just put on a monster show. But, like, there was a show within the show, Shohei Ohtani and Juan Soto. My goodness, that was quite a battle.
I just couldn't believe how far guys were hitting them. And I know it's Coors Field. I'm sure they didn't use, you know, humidified balls, right? They didn't put those in the humidor because they're trying to put on a show, right?
You would think.
Oh, my goodness. Every single guy hit one at least 470, right? Because it triggered those bonus,
yeah,
those bonus things. I don't think a single guy didn't hit one that far. It was just, it looked like when McGuire would take batting practice. That's what it kind of reminded me of, how far they were hitting. And then Alonso was just so impressive how locked in he was.
Yeah, he was dancing around in between pitches.
That was hilarious. I think that was just kind of a way he stayed loose and, like, you know, focused. You know, I think that was just, like, part of his game there, you know, and he loves the Home Run Derby.
Oh, it was funny. So, they cut away to like the batting cages at one point, and Alonso was sitting there sleeping, and it was in between, like, it was in between his time and you know, the next one, and Juan Soto was in there, who was going to have to go up against him next, and Juan's just, like, you know, ribbing him, trying to, you know, get in his head and get him off his game, and Alonso was just like, no, I'm good. it's all good. Let me dance around with my painted bat.
That's what he does, you know. He hits home runs, and it's what his swing is designed for. It's what they wanted him for. It's what he did in college, and so that's what he's going to do. He's going to hit home runs and BP, and if he wins $1 million, so be it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not a bad day's work when you can, you know, hit 51 home runs in an evening and earn more than you do the entire year.
Yeah. It was also, yeah, that's right. They said he made 667 or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
You look at, like, what was interesting too, it kind of showed you about hitting, because typically these guys would struggle for the first 30 to 40 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. And then they'd have to hit one and you'd have to get the feel of it, right? You could really see just the way kind of hitting works, right? It's about timing. So you've got to get time one and then you kind of feel it and you go from there.
Yeah, and it was interesting too, and they, I think they pointed it out with Soto more than anyone else, like his in-game batting stance is a little bit different than his home run derby stance, and when he really needed to hit him, they said, you notice he changed his stance, got crouched down a little bit more, and, you know, really got into him, but it was fun.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It was fun. The one that I thought was great was Ohtani. It was during actually batting practice before the derby started. He hit a ball and hit off the face of the upper deck in right field, like almost went out of the stadium completely. It was nuts. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, right field, those upper tank shots at Coors Field look really impressive because it gets kind of steep over on the right field side. And hitting into that third deck is just amazing. Apparently, someone tweeted this. I wasn't there, but for the Futures game, Nolan Gorman hit one up there in batting practice, apparently, too. And I think he was the first of all those young hitters to do that. So there's a guy with some really kind of eye-popping, you know, home run power, too. That he's going to be interesting to see now that he's a AAA.
Yeah, I'm excited about Gorman. I've been excited about him since, you know, we drafted him. Speaking of the minor leagues, you've been spending some time down in Springfield, you know, writing for Cardinals Magazine. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so Steve Zesch at the Cardinals Magazine was nice enough to just kind of reached out to me, and they said, do you want to do a couple stories for the magazine? And I said, sure, I'll, you know, practice the craft, have some fun. It sounded like, you know, and the two assignments ended up being Tyler O'Neill. So I'm kind of working on that story. And then the other one was Ivan Herrera, the young catcher down at AA Springfield, who is, I think, the number three prospect for the Cardinals. Gotten off to a little bit of a slow start down there, hitting 220-ish. But what they really like that they're seeing, he's walking a lot more than his walk rate is well up from previous. And the defense, you know, he talked about spring training this year, having a long conversation with Yadi about Yadi telling him, look, defense is more important for a catcher. If you get that part right, you can have a 15-year career. Doesn't matter whether you're a starter or a backup catcher, you got to get the defense right or teams aren't going to be interested. So that's kind of been his sort of MO this year, and they really like what they're seeing. His pop times are better, his throwing is outstanding. So defensively, he's really getting, you know, he's always been kind of a prospect because of his bat. He's a much better hitter than most catchers, but it's interesting this year so far, it's been on the other end, I think, where most of his strides are happening.
Yeah, it's interesting because Yadi, when he came up, was not, you know, known for being an offensive catcher, but he taught himself. I mean, he learned, you know, how to hit once he got here, but I mean, and there's his defense is likely going to carry him into the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's just, he's phenomenal. He's the best catcher I've ever watched.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about that too? Because I think catcher's the one position where you can kind of take that route anymore. You know, traditionally, it was catcher and shortstop, right? Maybe center field. You think about, what did Ozzie Smith bat at AAA with the Padres? 200? I don't think he would have been called up today.
No, right? He wouldn't.
He wouldn't have been called up today because with all this data, spray chart data about where they're going to hit it, you don't have to be as great defensively at shortstop because they're going to put you in the right position before the pitch is made. You don't see that athletic shortstop who hits low 200s anymore with little power. So catcher's the one position where you can kind of take that defense first path. And I do think that kind of makes it, you know, distinguishes it a little bit.
Yeah, catcher's the one guy on the field who every single game is involved in every single pitch. So, yeah, focusing on defense there would be, I mean, it's got to be top priority.
Right. So, and I think maybe more than any other position, it just takes so much work. You know, it's double the work. You got to be on it. You know, there's a lot more work to be done for a catcher, right? It's just it's a very kind of laborious position, but if you love it, you love it. One of my sons is a catcher, so I get excited talking about this stuff.
See, I was a pitcher, and I always loved pitching. I loved being on the mound, and I didn't have, like, great stuff. I think the fastest I ever threw a ball was 88. And,
okay,
you know,
that's
so,
pretty good.
Well,
that's awfully good.
88 would be extremely wild, so I'd have to sit right around 85 to have any kind of accuracy. So
you
wasn't
hit 88, but you pitched at 85.
Yeah, okay. So I would always mess with hitters, and me and my catcher. I mean, he was great. He just knew I was going to get out there and be a goofball. I mean, I would wink at guys, you know, blow them kisses from the mound, just because
he must have loved you.
Oh, I had great junk. I mean, I could throw a split finger like nobody's business, but yeah, I couldn't overpower them, so I had to do whatever I could to get in their heads. So.
Right.
But I mean, you take that. That's it. You take a catcher, and a catcher's trying to do that every single game with every single batter. You know, just trying to get in their heads. You know, you'll see Yadi kind of look up and talk to him, and you know, it's a demanding position. I don't envy anyone that plays it.
And that's where, like, I don't know if we'll ever have the right exact measurements for catchers, right? Because there are little things like you see with Yadi. And the more you watch and the more you appreciate it, he's always kind of looking around. His eyes are darting, right? He's picked, you know, he's looking at the runners. He's looking where everybody's positioned. He'll move infielders. They say that's kind of what sets him apart. It's that field vision, that field awareness, and just how it all works together. And I think, I don't know that you could ever measure something like that, what he's meant kind of, you know, to what this team's done in terms of run prevention. It's just been extraordinary for the entire time he's been here almost.
Yeah, it seems like he just has this natural intuition. To me, like, it wasn't any more evident than in spring training this year when that young guy from Houston, you know, wagged the finger at him, and Yadi's like, go ahead, steal second. And then Yadi throws him out on a changeup, and it's like, oh my gosh. It's like, don't mess with Yadi.
Yeah, and was that the one where Jack Flaherty happened to be doing commentary? He was doing an interview live, and he kind of said, "You're out."
Yep.
As soon as he went.
Yep.
He goes, "Yeah, you're out."
Yep, that is right. Yeah, Flaherty was doing the interview then. So the minor leagues looks like we've got some really good talent there, and I think what we're seeing right now at the major league level is there's talent, but it's just not coming together. And you know, nobody foresees, you know, 3/5 now, I guess now 4/5 of the starting rotation going down with Carlos being down too. I mean, the only guy that was there on opening day is Waino.
Right.
So what do we have pitching wise? I mean, everybody knows the name Liberatore. But who else do we have down there? And do you think the Cardinals are going to make any moves prior to the deadline this year?
That's a good question. I think you're right. There's no way to characterize the pitching situation other than just rotten luck, right? You know, I don't know that it would have been wise to just to rely on Miles Michaelis to give you 200 innings, given what he was coming off of. And so I guess you could have made the argument they should have foreseen some of this. But when you lose, as you mentioned, 4/5 of your rotation, there's not a lot of teams who are just going to keep going without missing a beat, especially when one of them is named Jack Flaherty, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that blow has been a bigger blow than maybe we realized at the time. You know, you think about as good as he is, it's only every fifth day. But it just seems to have had this compounding effect on the rest of the pitching staff for whatever reason. And, you know, that's one thing I think I agree with you that all you can say there is just terrible luck. Should they have had more depth? They had, you know, pretty good depth. They traded Austin Gomber. That took a little bit of a dent out of their depth. And they never really replaced him, right? As he was kind of that sixth starter for really, it seemed like 3 years, right? So they didn't have that guy. Oviedo, I don't think, was ready. Jake Woodford, probably not ready to be an everyday major league starter just yet. So they probably did leave themselves a little bit thin. But again, 4 out of 5, that's a lot of slack to make up. In terms of minor leagues, I'm a little confused what they are thinking with Liberatore. he's had kind of this disjointed season. He pitched for Team USA a bit. You know, we saw him in the Futures game just Sunday night. So he's worn, what is it, three uniforms now. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know, it's interesting. It almost kind of seems like they don't really want to touch him this year. And I think if you're gonna, you know, be this team that's hovering around 500 or maybe even a little worse, that might be wise. But, you know, he's their top prospect. And so there's always going to be that conjecture and people are going to want to see him. So I would say if they're struggling, I would not expect to see him, but I maybe they'd want to get him a little bit of a look in September. But I don't think that he'll be the answer at this point, because I think it's probably a little bit deeper than that. If they're going to kind of make some kind of special run in the second half and get back in this thing, it's going to be led by, you know, Jack Flaherty returning and some other guys getting healthy. I don't think we'll see Carlos again, but maybe Miles Michaelis, who knows? So it's going to take those guys, I think, to do it, because I don't think they really have the answers in the minor leagues, particularly if they want to leave Liberatore down there and keep his clock from ticking, as well as his service time clock, as well as, you know, just making sure he's absolutely ready to dominate when he does come up.
Yeah, see, and I was of the mindset that maybe the service time clock wasn't as big of a worry, because with the CBA expiring, you don't know what the next one's going to look like.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, you don't know which parts of it are going to change and which won't, and that may be something that doesn't change, and so you don't want to start that. But yeah, I mean, the guy that I feel really bad for, and I was talking with the other guys at, you know, Gateway City Sports about this last week, the guy I feel really bad for in all of this is Oviedo. Because he's got great stuff, and you know, he was showing flashes of, I think, what he can be when he was up, but he was just thrust into a position he wasn't ready for. And, you know, it's of no fault of his own, and really no fault of the organizations either. You know, the other options, you know, Woody wasn't ready. Zach Thompson hasn't been pitching that great. And then, of course, at the time, Liberatore was with Team USA. You know, Oviedo was kind of like, who can we throw in there? And, you know, I think he did admirably, but as far as a guy's development, you know, when you talk about not having any major league games last year to now, you know, that your development is stunted. Let's just throw you right into the majors and see what you can do. I feel bad for the guy. I hope his confidence isn't shaken, because I like him. I like his stuff.
His stuff is really good. And I think, you know, last year there were so many guys you could say that of, right? Like with the COVID situation knocking so many major leaguers out, you know, testing positive, even if they, you know, didn't have the symptoms. You had probably at one time back in, you know, I think it was early August of last year, you had like 12 guys on the team who you could have said exactly what you just said of Oviedo. They weren't ready. It wasn't fair to them to put them up there at that point. You know, you think of some of the relievers they trotted out there because they had like nobody. And a couple of them got embarrassed. You know, you think of, I'm blanking actually on the young Ricardo Sanchez. Is that his name? A couple of those guys got really, really lit up. And it was just, you know, they had called him up from Double A. They hadn't been at Double A that long. They didn't have overpowering stuff to begin with. They just didn't have the tools to compete at this level. And Oviedo could be one of those guys. You hope it doesn't set him back long term. He doesn't seem like it. He seems like a really confident kid, right? Like really mature, confident kid. So you don't think he'll kind of keep going. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you think of some of the circumstances this team has had the last couple of years, it's probably tougher to deal with than any of us really fully understand.
Yeah. You know, and Mo and Schilt take a lot of criticism for this, you know, and I tend to, I call myself a Mo apologist, you know, for several years. And when we get to this year, I couldn't defend that. Like I could not defend the gaping holes that everybody could see. You know, they needed a better bench bat. Carpenter is not, I mean, he's just a shell of himself, and you could see it in spring training. You had several question marks in the rotation. You know, and there were options available in the offseason to go out and get somebody, you know, just to provide that insurance. But again, I mean, you can never foresee losing that many guys. And so, and in that respect, you know, I still have to you know, say, hey, you know, Mo did what he could. I mean, nobody's going to say, you know, anything bad about the Arenado trade. I mean, that was just ridiculous.
Right.
I thought the Cardinals fleeced the Diamondbacks for Goldie, but goodness, this was even bigger, I thought.
Right.
So, I mean, there's things that, and every team goes through it, and it was predictable, you know, after having a shortened season last year, to expect these starters to be able to go out and carry a full workload again. You know, what do you think about that? I mean, it seemed obvious that it was coming.
Yeah, I agree with you on one point, and I thought this, that I wrote this in the off season. They're too right-handed on the in the lineup. I know they have a couple switch hitters, but those guys are not power bats. I thought they needed a left-handed power bat. And, you know, I really thought Jock Peterson or Kyle Schwarber would have been good fits. Now, the outfielders have done well for the most part when they've been healthy. Tyler O'Neill is really kind of turning into the player they hoped he would be. Bader showing some signs as well. Carlson's been fine. You know, you wonder where the power is, but they really lack, I think, for left-handed power, and I think that has shown up. I think they're very susceptible to good right-handed pitching, and that, I think, is reflected in the numbers, and that could have been foreseen, right? So some of these things you're talking about, and you can argue if you're going to go out and get a player as transformative as Nolan Arenado, you owe it to him and everybody else to build, you almost – then you need to invest more to make sure that the pieces around him are there. And I think you could argue that they maybe didn't build enough pitching depth and they didn't have a balanced kind of offense, you know, and I think those are legit. And I wonder kind of, and I don't have access to, you know, I haven't had a conversation that leads me to believe this, but it almost feels like ownership said, okay, this deal's too good to pass up. We're going to do the Arenado thing. But if you're going to add $35 million to my payroll, you're done. Absolutely done. You're not getting another reliever. You're not doing anything. And I wonder whether that kind of was the moment when these little, you know, the issues that you said, we all could see some of this stuff coming. I wonder whether they just didn't have the resources to get something done. And a lot of the players who they would have been willing to trade, whether it's a Matt Carpet or others, because of the contracts were untradeable. So I wonder whether they just got into a little bit of one of these situations that so many front offices dread, which is a roster that's kind of set in place and that you can't really change.
Yeah, and that's tough. But, you know, they've got, and I tell this to people all the time, they've got a lot of money coming off the books after this year. You know, the CBA is going to be, you know, renegotiated this offseason. I kind of think that the Cardinals are just going to kind of play it easy, you know, let the season play out how it will, and then next year after the CBA is in order and they got all that money off the books, maybe really, you know, make a couple of big splashes. You know, there's going to be tons of shortstops out there. You know,
right.
I think that it's inevitable that Trevor Story ends up in St. Louis. Just the the relationship he has with Arenado and, you know, his competitive nature – I think he'll end up here at some point. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe we can get Arenado to, you know, invite him over for dinner with Mo and say, hey, let's get this thing done. That would be awesome. I think that would be great.
Yeah, you don't know what motivates a guy, right? Like, he's going into free agency, so it's absolutely his show finally. But you're right. I don't know a ton about Trevor Story, but when you kind of, what you do know, it seems like this area would fit, you know, the kind of person he is. It does seem that way.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. It was funny watching the two of them last night at the Derby, Arenado and Story. I mean, Arenado loves the guy. I mean, absolutely loves him, and I think Story really admires him as well. So it would be a nice fit. But could you imagine, you know, being Colorado, like the fans there, if Story came here and then Arenado and Story won the World Series together as Cardinals?
Oh my goodness.
That would just be pouring salt in the wound.
They're probably getting used to it, right? When DJ LeMahieu won the batting title, and you know, they're kind of sensing the pattern.
Yeah.
Things aren't exactly going swimmingly in Colorado, right? I mean, you had a pretty bad GM there for a while. You have you know, I think most people would view that as unstable ownership a little bit, kind of fly off the handle, say things that don't make sense, antagonize players from time to time. So, yeah, I mean, not going great in Colorado, that's for sure. But they've always got the Diamondbacks to point to and laugh at, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
what's funny about that, like, it's not like the NL Central has been lighting the world on fire, right? I mean, it's kind of interesting how mediocre this division is, other than Milwaukee's pitching.
Yeah, Milwaukee's pitching has been phenomenal.
Right.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. You look at the Central, and it's not like, I mean, you got Milwaukee, and then there's everybody else except the Pirates, and then there's, you know, the Pirates.
Yeah,
but,
that's right.
You know, one of the
everybody
things...
Everybody else is the same.
Yeah, everybody else is the same, basically. And I, at the beginning of the season, I looked at this, and I thought about how it seemed like teams were just not doing anything to improve. The Cubs were selling off, the mm-hmm. Pirates were selling off, yeah. And, you know, I tended to call the NL Central a dumpster fire this offseason.
Yeah.
It's looking a lot like that's continuing in to the season too. I mean, Milwaukee's just running away with it. What are they, nine and a half games up right now?
Something like that, 8.5. Yeah,
yeah.
And so it's.
I mean, that's not an easy mountain to climb. I mean, the Cardinals have done it before, but you know, given the roster and the way it looks now, I mean, you don't have the same, kind of pitching they had, you know, back in 2006,
right.
You know, 2011. I don't see them, you know, coming back from this without, you know, short of making a huge move, you know,
yeah, and which I don't foresee. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause what options are out there? I mean, what even seems
right.
Partially plausible?
And why would you trade, you know, someone who could help you, you know, a prospect who could help you in a few years when, you know, you're 2-3 games under 500, you're going to go sacrifice some of your future for the now. It just kind of doesn't add up. You know, maybe if you could get a guy who's got a year and a half left on his deal, do you consider that? Or maybe a guy who's early in the arbitration process, you might consider that. But in terms of going out and getting one of the, you know, the guys who are going to hear so much over the next few weeks in trade rumors, you know, the rental players, I just don't see that happening. It hasn't been their MO even when, you know, they're maybe one player away, and now they certainly don't look like they're one player away. That's why I think really the guy who's going to have to lead this sort, if there is going to be a second half surge, would be Jack Flaherty, would be, you know, Adam Wainwright continuing to be so consistent. So I think it would come from those guys, but, you know, that's not as exciting, of course, before the trade deadline. And it's always possible. Again, there's young players who don't get as much pub, but often make the difference. Look at the shortstop in Milwaukee, Adames.
Oh yeah.
I mean, nobody thought he was the hitter that we've seen, but he's made a huge difference. So maybe a guy like that is out there who we're not even anticipating.
You know, it's funny because, well, it's funny that you say that, because right before Harrison Bader went down, the offense seemed to be clicking. And,
yeah. You
know, and I found myself thinking the other day, who would have thought that Harrison Bader was the spark plug to this offense?
The offensive key to the Cardinals, Harrison Bader.
Yeah.
Who Cardinals fans were so frustrated with for years because he had that high strikeout rate and all sorts of things.
Yeah, but even now
actually, if you look at Bader's peripherals, he really has made, like, real improvements, difficult improvements. He's cut down the strikeout rate, walked a little more. So, you know, I think there are some good signs with Harrison.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I was looking at it last year when the season ended, because I was like, okay, we got to do something with this outfield. And I looked at all the outfielders, and Bader was the only one performing above league average offensively.
Right.
You know, and so the signs have been there. I mean, the talent's there. Like with any other guy. I mean, he doesn't have to be an O'Neill type, but make contact, get on base. You know, once you're on base, I mean, the speed is phenomenal. I mean, if he can just, if he can just get on base, he can cause some trouble. And, you know, then that gets in the pitcher's head. They got to worry about Bader being on base, you know, and by that time, you know, you're back near the top of the lineup. You got Edmund, Carlson, you know, Goldie and Arenado to deal with. I mean, that
Right.
It really can be. You know, maybe it's more important. Maybe Bader's more important in this offense than any of us ever thought.
Well, honestly, like if they ever do go to this universe of the age, Harrison Bader is going to be the perfect number nine hitter. And I know he probably would hate to hear something like that, but that if he's going to have tough at bats and like turn the lineup over, that's incredible. That's really important. That's why, you know, for so many years, some of these American League teams were just so hard to beat because they just had that length through their lineup that National League teams never had, because you'd always have like a weak hitting shortstop hitting eighth and or a catcher hitting eighth and then your pitcher. And it would just always break up big innings. And now, you know, if Bader's going to grind through at bats and be that guy, you know, I really do envision that if they do go to this universal DH, he could really be an asset down there at the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah. How likely do you think that is? You think the universal DH is coming?
I thought we'd have it this year. I was really surprised they didn't get that together. Yeah, because both sides want it. I think that'll be one that they'll probably come to. There's nobody fighting, you know, against it really, other than maybe some of the fans around here. And unfortunately, the fans don't have a direct seat at those at that table when they're talking about those kind of high stakes deals. They should, in my opinion. But yeah, I think they probably will push through that universal DH. You know, it's kind of weird to have it last year than not have it this year. I don't know. I think they've kind of botched that a little bit. You saw Manfred getting booed the other day at the draft, like every pick, I think. You know, that's not an ideal situation for a league. But well,
what's interesting is the rules that they did keep that they didn't, like, as opposed to the ones that they didn't, like the universal DH. You know, I've always been a proponent of a pitcher hitting. You know, I guess I'm just really old school traditionalist in that regard. But, you know, I would have much rather seen the DH stay than to see, you know, seven inning doubleheaders or a guy starting on second base in extra innings. I mean, it's like they kept the goofiest stuff but left out the stuff that actually made sense.
Yeah, the weird thing about the extra inning rule is, I think when they started the runner at second, it's the first time in baseball history that a play began without the pitcher initiating it. I mean, that's a pretty deep change when you really think about it, you know? Like, everything initiates with that pitcher having the ball in his hand and delivering it, and now it doesn't, right? You've got a guy at second. So, yeah, I know. I think that's right. But I do think, you know, this is like, a commissioner is not afraid to make pretty deep changes to the game. So I think they will get rid of pitchers hitting. And, you know, I guess there's people on both sides, but I think for me, like at this point, I'm just ready to kind of just get it over with already. You know, yeah. Like I spent a lot of time covering both leagues. So there's times when I really like, I like enjoy the offense when the pitcher doesn't have to hit, you know, just of having actual hitters competing against the pitcher. But I also, you know, I do appreciate sometimes when a manager's put in a pickle in the National League and has to really make some tougher decisions, and maybe, you know, there's a little more like possibility for a manager to kind of embarrass themselves, so they have to work a little harder to stay a step ahead of the game. You do see some of that, which is kind of fun sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's the aspect of National League Baseball that fans really love, is there is a lot more strategy and gamesmanship that's put into it. But even that's kind of been curbed a little bit with, you know, the three batter minimum rule for pitchers. So it kind of cuts down on, you know, the strategy that you could have, you know, bringing in a lefty specialist. And, you know, now your lefty specialist has to get to righties too, because he can't just, you know, go up and face one guy. So, I mean, the game is changing, you know, and to a certain extent, I can accept that. You know, it's like anything else. You know, football changed, you know, NBA basketball changed, and it all changed to create a product that the fans enjoyed more. And I know baseball is starved for that younger generation of fan that just, it seems to be what they've missed for several years now. So I can understand making some of the changes to appeal to like new fans.
Right. And boy, is baseball, you know, Have you seen an ad for Major League Baseball in the last year that didn't have Fernando Tatis in it, by the way?
No, I haven't.
He seems to be that charismatic guy who they're really building that campaign on. And I think that's absolutely correct. You know, Acuna could have been that guy, too. You know, that brash personality with just off the charts, you know, ability. So it is fun to see that. And it's, some of the changes to the game aren't even really resulting from rule changes. It's just kind of this gradual evolution. This three true outcomes kind of game, which can be so boring to watch, right? That we've lamented at times. There just aren't as many balls put in play. And so you sit there, you go, okay, is the guy going to strike out, walk, or hit a home run? Right. And that's, you know, kind of fun, but it's not as fun when you go four innings and a ball hasn't been put in play on either side, right?
Yeah.
And you've just been sitting there sipping your whatever beverage you have at the game going, okay, when's the sport going to start, right? So I think that's still where, like, a lot of their thinking is, how do we get out of that, which has been created by these analytics-based front offices, that it turns out that style of baseball is the most efficient way to score runs. So all the teams want to do that because that's how you win the most. But collectively, it doesn't make for a great product. So I think figuring that part out will be a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that is that's all the time that we've got for today. Mark, I want to thank you so much. I feel like there's so much more that we could have talked about that we weren't able to get to and to unpack. So we'll have to have you on again. Thanks again, Mark. And can you give our listeners just an idea of where they can find your work right now? Obviously, give them a follow at Mark A. Saxon on Twitter. But where else can we find you, Mark?
Yeah, I'm not quite as active on social media as I was when I was working at The Athletic or ESPN. But so this week, Wednesday and Thursday, I'm on the air on 101 ESPN, still working with those guys, writing a couple pieces for the magazine that will be out in the August issue, actually. So if you happen to be at the stadium or you want to buy the magazine, you can read a couple of my pieces there. But other than that, I'm kind of a free agent looking around and kind of sometimes enjoying that process, sometimes not as much. Like when my wife yells at me, like I need to do more, but generally on it. And thank you for having me, Brian, because I realize I might have yacked a little too much, but when you call it the Yacker Jack podcast, what do you expect, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's why we're here. we're just two guys talking about baseball. So again, Mark, I want to thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Brian. It was a real joy. Thanks for having me.
That is it for our show for today, guys. Once again, I want to thank you for being here. And I also want to thank my friend Mark Saxon for joining us. We'll have to have him on again sometime and go over some of the things we weren't able to go over. But thanks again for joining us. Make sure that you check out all of the quality shows that we have over on GatewayCitySports.com. Make sure you check out 2 for 3, Team of Rivals, Turn Into, The Rundown, and the Derek King Sports Show. Especially make sure that you go back and watch the Derek King Sports Show from last night. His interview with Howard Balzer is amazing, going over everything that's going on with the St. Louis NFL lawsuit. I want to thank you guys once again for being here. Stay good, stay blessed, stay dry. This has been Yakker Jacks.